Well, welcome to a Friday webinar. Nice and early in the morning. So we're all sharp and ready to go. Not that the business news community really needs to be sharp on this particular subject. We have been covering the 12BA for quite some time now. I was under the impression that we're running out of capacity, but not the case with Decentral. And we will be going through a presentation now. There are quite a few interesting variations on the theme. I say that the biz news community understands how this all works, but maybe just by way of background for those of you who might be falling into this field for the first time, South Africa went through a crisis, as we well know, on the provision of electricity. The ANC government, against all of its ideologies, which is pretty much socialist driven, realized the only way it was going to overcome this crisis was by bringing the private sector in. That the best way to do that is to provide tax incentives. Those tax incentives have been, they're in law, they can't be withdrawn, they can't be made retrospective. If you take advantage of the tax incentive, you get it. That's the way a civilized constitutional democracy works. So those tax incentives are in place. We know we haven't had load shedding for quite some time. And these tax incentives will be expiring on the 28th of February, which is the end of our tax year. So it's not a marketing spiel. That's where we are. You're going to get the tax incentives until the 28th of February, then they expire. So there is an opportunity to participate, and we're going to be exploring that now. What's happened is because you can only benefit from the tax incentive fully if you invest in a project that is already existing at least by the 28th of February. There's a little bit of a technical thing there. Anyone new coming into the market now is going to be battling, but this is not the case with Decentral. And I think let's start off with Mitchell Fieldgate. We have spoken before on Biz News to Mitchell and to Luel about what they are putting together. And Mitchell, maybe if you can just unpack very briefly before we give the slides or watch Luel's slide presentation, if you could just unpack for us your relationship. In fact, before I even go there, Stu, my apologies. We should have started off with the tech, make sure that that's all working. Do you want to just ensure that our community can hear and see us?
Thanks, Alec. And thanks, Mitchell and Lewis, for joining us. Alec, just quickly, for those new to the webinars, there's a control panel at the bottom of your screen. There's a little high five option. It's called the raise hand option. If you can see four faces on screen and a presentation in the background, can you please give me some high fives? Okay. Got some half. There we go. Always good to see. Alec also mentioned questions. There's a Q&A option on that same control panel. If you can please put your questions in there. I know Alec will keep an anonymity. So my pronunciation might not have been that great there. But first names only. If you put your questions through there, Alec will manage that to Luel and Mitchell. But all good this side, Alec. Have fun.
Yeah, I think that's important. When you do put your question there, I know some people are concerned that perhaps the tax man's listening, and he is. I can tell you that. He definitely is. But he won't know who you are because we will only address you by your first name. Mitchell, maybe you could just unpack for us your relationship with Luel and with Decentral.
Morning. Morning, Alec, and morning, everyone that's listening. Yeah, great to be here. So this is a marriage between Pangaea Wealth and Decentral Energy. So Pangaea Wealth is a financial advisory firm, a wealth management firm, licensed FSP. We do your typical wealth management activities like portfolio management for high net worth individuals. We're a boutique firm, so we are not beholden to any one provider. We're not a Discovery or Investec where we have to push those products. And because we're independent, we can look at bespoke investments like the one we're going to talk about today. So I know a lot of people are frustrated with dealing with like big banks. I don't want to name drop, but a lot of them aren't looking at these 12B investments. They looked at the 12J investments because the 12J was almost going to go for an indefinite period. But the banks don't see it worthwhile to do the due diligence, get everything sorted, make sure everything's kosher, and then they only can do it for 1 year. You know, it's not really worth their time, especially when they've got a lack of funds. I mean, RMB doesn't want to take out, you know, only 50 mil. They want to do 500 mil. But as we said, we can only get the deduction on the projects that we deploy this year, and they are limited projects. So I come from an alternative investment background. I've looked at about 10 of these 12 Bs last year. I placed a lot of my clients into the various 12 Bs, and I saw what worked, what didn't work. Things like promising a deduction and deployment and then not achieving that deduction and deployment was probably the biggest contributor to investor, you know, apprehension or dismay. So we've now partnered with Decentral. We have a mutual connection. My partner, Jamie Skuse, he's very well experienced CFA wealth manager. He knows Luel's partner, Christian Bode. We linked up to say, okay, guys, how can we work together? And it's been a great partnership where we helped design the product using like the knowledge that I gained last year, looking at all the 12 Bs, you know, to really raise the positives of a 12 B investment, which include highest tax deduction, highest deployment, no upfront fees, only performance fees. We'll get to it later, but there sometimes is a conflict. So we completely removed the conflict. And dealing with Decentral Energy, who've been doing solar for 15 years. We love dealing with them. It's a great culture fit, but most importantly, they've been doing solar for 15 years. They're a very profitable business, healthy balance sheet. And if there was a 12B, if there wasn't a 12B, they would still be doing solar. Okay. It's a benefit for them. It's not the whole reason for their existence, unlike some other 12Bs we've seen. Not only do they have great experience in the energy sector, but they also have great experience in the fund management. So they've run a very successful 12J fund in 2018, and they also run a successful 12B fund last year where they achieved these high deductions and full deployment. So yeah, we're fulfilling the administration function and the onboarding function, and we did help design the product as well. But we are essentially independent in this whole process, where we are really pushing for the benefit of the investors. And yeah, I think that's essentially the background to our relationship with Luel and Decentral.
Brilliant. A lot of our community are, for instance, involved in golden visas. So we do know that some South Africans want to go and live abroad or at least have another passport. And so they got golden visas. And now Portugal's been quite popular. Now they forgot the T's and C's, that you have to be able to speak Portuguese at some point in time and pass a proficiency test. And now we're getting people coming back to us and saying, oh, damn, it's a very difficult language to learn. So I guess that's another thing we need to understand about the T's and C's. It's quite clear and what they are in this instance as well. And I like the point that you made, Mitchell, that Decentral is not a pop-up 12B or a 12J or a solar company to take advantage of the taxes. They've been around for a decade and a half, and this is their business. But hey, if the government wants to give you extra incentives, let's use them. I guess that's over to you, Luel. This is your project. This is you're the man responsible for it. Mitchell will be obviously staking Pangea's reputation, and I know it's a very fine reputation, but how would you like to go forward? Do you want to tell us a bit about Decentral, or do you have that in your slide presentation?
Alec, thanks. Let me drop a few brief words. I won't cover what I'll cover in the presentation, but fundamentally, Decentral is an energy business. Myself and my business partner, Christian, we're both engineers, both very passionate about energy projects, their development, their engineering, procurement, construction, asset management, financing, you know, the whole story. Our business has definitely not been primarily financial engineering and, looking for opportunities to raise capital just because of tax breaks. Having said that, we've been fortunate in that certain tax breaks have fitted very well into our energy business. And we did start a Section 12J back in 2018. And it's been fantastic. I think we've done an average dividend yield of over 5% per year, as well as grown the fund by more than 50% over the same period. So it's done excellently for our 12J investor group. And then last year we ran a pilot 12B fund, and also very good, 100% deployment, 222% deduction for all of our investors. So I'll get into a little more detail in the presentation. Essentially we are first and foremost an energy business, not a financial engineering business.
Brilliant. And that's why you've got the financial engineers as your partners. So I guess it all makes a lot of
Okay. And it's really been a great relationship with Pangea. They've been a lot of fun to work with, very entrepreneurial, at the same time, just absolutely committed to integrity and good business practice. So it's really been fantastic partnership and a lot of fun. And I'm sure it'll go into the future.
Okay, over to you, sir. You've got the buttons to get the presentations going.
Cool. So I think in a nutshell, all these pictures that you see, I mean, even this really nice one in the beginning, are all projects from Decentral. So they're not Google projects, Google images. And the purpose of today is to give an understanding of the investment rather than talking in general. I mean, we had a very nice discussion last time we spoke about the 12B industry with, breadcrumbs of our product, but keen to show your community or your tribe why are we so confident in our investments on its own and also when compared to other 12Bs. So to just highlight the benefits, and this could be to wet the palate a bit, if you are on the top tax bracket, this investment will give you 100% of your capital back. I'm going to get to how we achieve that, but in a nutshell, we give a high enough deduction where if you're in the 45% tax bracket, you put R1 in, you get R1 out. Okay. If you're a prop taxpayer or you're offsetting CGT, then that tax saving is realized immediately because you just don't pay SARS that R1. If you're a pay as you earn, it can still work well, but then you have to use your after tax money because you've already paid tax on your salary and then receive the R1 refund next year. Other benefits of this investment, and each of these points we're going to get into in depth, it's just high level. We have over 40 projects, and that is really the key driver in this. You think about solar investment. The total risk equals sovereign risk, South Africa risk. The panels have to be deployed within South Africa. There's no way around that. There's sovereign risk plus project risk. Okay. So if I have two projects, I've already halved my project risk. Okay, so we, after 20, just like you'd have in any investment planning or financial planning, over 20 projects or investments, you can actually diversify and eliminate that singular risk or project risk. And the fact that Decentral have got 40 projects over the line, and these aren't targets, these are signed PPAs, and that's the hardest part is to get them to this point. They've already got 40 plus for this year. That's the biggest benefit. So in the event that one or two or three go south, we still have, the other 30 plus or 40 plus to carry the weight. We've got a high IRR because you do get the highest tax saving. IRR is a bit of a weird one because if let's say I owe SARS 500,000 Rand now for my provisional tax, and I invest instead of paying SARS, then I've essentially got zero money at risk, but I'm going to be earning on the 500K. So your IRR, just be wary. You people can engineer it based on the timing. So if the example I just put on, your IRR is infinite. So we could have put, 400% IRR. But it's just a good way to contextualize it where you have zero money at risk, but you're earning on a 500K investment. The way we've structured it, we've used priority profits. You can think of it as a coupon, Alec, but we can't use the phrase coupon because it indicates non-ownership. So when looking at all these structures, Decentral is responsible for the debt. They're responsible for the operations. And all of these 12Bs have the same similar structure with an income and deed partnership. That results in a lot of conflicts, right? If, let's say, I'm only giving 20% to the investor, there can be a conflict of interest where I could overexpense or repay the capital later, or it just creates weird incentives. And I'm not saying any of the other 12B funds are bad people or Decentral's bad people. I know Luol was giving me great praise, so maybe shouldn't be saying this, but I just know history has taught us if you give human beings the wrong incentive, it normally doesn't end well. So we've put a scenario where there's no upfront fee, no annual fee, there's nothing in it for Decentral. They're really putting their money where their mouth is and say, only after we've fulfilled our obligation to pay you, the investor, do we actually earn upside. So I've seen other funds, they're charging, 4% upfront fees, 4% annual fees, high fees and that's regardless if the project goes up, down, sideways. So this really incentivizes everyone and makes sure that the chance of getting an outcome for the investor is much higher than if it was just a normal fee structure. We also have assets that are, we've got 18 projects that are ready to be turned on. It must be noted, Alec, that we do have a deadline for this first partnership for end of August. It's not an arbitrary deadline. It's because the tax advice we received, and when we get to the tax side, we're going to really dive into the tax side, because we've been talking to our tax attorneys at Weber Wenzel, June Chong and Duncan McAllister. Duncan's ex-SARS of 35 years. We've been butting heads with them for like 3 months. We can only turn on the assets once the partnership is crystallized and finalized. So we want to finalize the partnership first and then turn on the assets. And Luol, I think I'm very keen for him to speak to go into depth on that front later. So that's it in a nutshell. The 12B incentive, as you mentioned, it's benefiting SARS the most in the long term. They really had a big mess with load shedding, and the incentive, spurred 6,000 megawatts of solar last year, which is approximately, remember, 1,000 megawatts is one stage of load shedding. And I think RMB is estimating by the end of 2028 that it will be 28,000 megawatts of load shedding. So it's quite remarkable what happens when you, because remember, back in the day, you couldn't even make big projects over 1 megawatt. Everything had to be through the government. And you reap what you sow, and we saw them get hammered in the polls, and they have much less revenue now from the lost taxes that they didn't receive because companies were running these expensive generators. And South Africa is like the best place on planet Earth to put renewable energy. I mean, we've got the like amazing wind up in the north in the Eastern Cape. Sun is like the third best sun in the world. You look at somewhere like like Netherlands or the Scandinavian countries. It's not really, the sun's not out that much there, but they have the most solar in the world, just purely because of the right incentives there. I mean, they've got even higher incentives than we have now, and the ease of doing business. If you're going to Netherlands, you don't have to do BE, requirements. They want you to do business. They want you to invest. It's just a much better place to do business. And it's led to this weird result where you've got the leaders in solar being like Netherlands, which has one of the worst suns in the world. So back to the investment. The structure of the fund is a income and deed partnership. Okay, so we take, I don't know if you can see my mouse there. The investor comes in as a limited partner. So they would deploy 55 Rand equity. We then take 45 Rand of debt. Okay, we have 100 Rand in here. These debt funds are from Decentral Energy, who have their own third-party debt providers. And these debt funds are non-recourse or limited recourse, which means their only recourse they have is within the partnership. So the investor, even though you've taken on debt, you know, if you take on debt, by definition, it's more risky than not taking on debt. But the investor has two layers of protection here. The first layer is that the debt is limited recourse, so they can't come after you outside of this partnership. The second layer is your limited partner, so your liability is limited. Okay, remember, in a normal partnership, you have unlimited liability. This is run by Decentral, who have unlimited liability. They don't get the tax benefit. They don't have limited liability. They have unlimited liability. But the way we've structured it, they're going to earn the upside. So they're taking on the risk, but they also are taking on the high upside. So we have 100 Rand in the partnership. What are we going to do with that? We then deploy it on the green energy asset portfolio, which is then deployed onto the various off-takers. So an off-taker would be, for example, Fine Chemicals Corp in Cape Town. And Decentral and the team would go to them and say, okay, guys, we're going to save you energy and costs. We're going to put the solar on. We're going to install it, maintain it, insure it. It's our asset. We own it. You then have to agree to buy the electricity from the panels for the next 20 years, and that's solidified with a 20-year power purchase agreement.
Mitchell, it's a lovely picture there. Those, or maybe Luel, it's your project, are those in place? Are those all solar panels, and then the factory, is that the one where there aren't any solar panels on it? Just explain that picture to us, if you would.
Sure. So this particular image, this site is not yet constructed. It's just commenced its EPC process. Aspen is the owner of Fine Chemicals. So this particular asset will only be switched on towards the end of this year. It's one of the ones that's currently in EPC. But it's a nice asset to talk about. This particular one creates 900,000 Rand of savings for Fine Chemicals in the first year, 7 million within 5 years. And in addition, and this is important to note, 45,000 tons of CO2 emissions over the life of this particular asset. Whilst there is a very good financial incentive to play a part in this, there's a genuine feel good and green energy aspect to this. We are reducing the carbon intensity of energy in the country, and it's a nice case study, this particular asset.
So Aspen own all of these buildings, presumably, and then you get the right to put your solar panels on top of those buildings, but they're still your solar panels, and they still pay you for that energy.
Yeah, exactly. So we own the physical solar assets, all the reticulation, inverters, etc. And then there's a tie-in point at which, you know, after which everything is owned by our customer. But we have access rights into the building or into the premises, firstly to fulfill our EPC, and then to do the asset management thereafter during the operations phase. Go for it.
Mitch. Sorry to jump in, Luel. And thanks so much, Alec. I think that's a great way we go about this. I think Luel has a lot more insight into these projects. So when it comes to the underlying, I think Luel, I think you can speak about it. And then when it comes to the 12B investment side, I can take it away. Luel, you've got 60 projects that you've done that are operating, generating electricity and generating revenue. I've heard you told me once there was one client, a body corporate, that didn't pay. So could you just explain what the risk would be from your side, like if in the event of a default, how you would handle that, and maybe tell us the experience you had on the when that one client didn't pay?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's an area of our business we're very proud of. We've developed what we call our investment policy. And it's essentially the way we analyze credit risk for any asset that we consider. And it's been developed over the last 6 years and honed for, you know, whether it's a retail property owning landlord, or it's a light industrial customer who's a tenant in a building. You know, these customers are extremely different in their profiles, but all of them can be good credit, and all of them can be bad credit. We look heavily at gearing ratios. If it's a property vehicle, we look at the feet through the door. We look at all these kinds of things. Generally speaking, we like our investment in a given premises to be not more than 10% of the balance sheet of our customer. So we keep that rate. That's a key focus for us. And generally speaking, our assets are typically actually closer to 1% of the balance sheet of the customer that we're looking at. So even in the case where you might find that the property is owed by a third party landlord, if the tenant has sufficient investment in the machinery and the equipment that's on site, there's still sufficient credit there for us. And then, of course, we look at the usual metrics like earnings of the customer, solvency, and all of these kinds of things. Body corporates are also, again, a very different kettle of fish because their balance sheets typically are very small. However, the value of the assets of those properties, if you add them all up, is very high. And then, of course, we look at occupancy, we look at energy consumption, and we look at the areas in which we are investing. And that doesn't mean that we look for affluent areas. In fact, it often means the opposite. Because if an area is well tenanted and a property is likely to be occupied, then it means that energy is going to be consumed in that building in the long term, and therefore can constitute good credit for us. So, yeah, long story short, we turn down a lot of projects. It's not easy, in fact, to find good credit, especially when you're looking long term. Most of our PPAs are 20 years, and that is a very long, outlook for any business or any residential building or whatever it might be. But so far so good. We've had no defaults. The examples Mitch mentioned, it was in fact a retirement village, and they, for some reason they decided that they felt like not paying and seeing if they could negotiate a discount. In our PPAs, we have various default provisions, and this particular case was what we call a customer default. There can be supplier defaults, or there can be defaults for things like force majeure, and the consequences of default are different in each case. So the consequences of default in this case would have been the customer would be required to pay the customer default termination payment, which is essentially a liquidated number which we provide for upfront in the contract. So there's never any debate about what's the damage that Decentral is suffering as a result of the default. It's predetermined in the contract, and generally speaking, that number is sufficiently high that it's a strong incentive not to default. And sure enough, the customer, once they'd received a letter from us, well, from our attorneys, in that case, they very quickly backtracked and are now fully paid up and are seeing the savings and realizing that in fact this all makes sense. That's the kind of thing that can happen when you find a situation like a body corporate with different individuals who are trustees, and someone has an idea in their head that there may be something better out there. People can do strange things, but provided your power purchase agreement contract is strong and you've thought through all of the potential eventualities, generally speaking, we found that we've been okay. Having said that, most of our power purchase agreements are not longer than 5 years in. So there's still a long way to go. But all of our customers have been really strong. What's also very important. Yeah, Mitch.
Sorry, no, I think just to interject there, sorry, Luol, is the biggest benefit, as I mentioned, Alec, is, I think, Luol, we can talk about the PPAs in depth for, a full hour and the actual off-takers. But just to get back to the investment, the diversification is the biggest factor. There's no, if I was a betting man, I would bet at least one or two or three are going to default over a 20-year time horizon. Okay, that's just things happen. You can do as much due diligence and credit checks, but it's just the nature of risk, especially in this country. So what gives us a lot of when we were looking at this, what made us most excited was the diversification. So your investment's not going, we're not putting one investor into this project. Or, you know, it's one investor is equally split across the full stack of 44 projects within 12 industry sectors, 6 provinces. You really diversified. Not one project, Alec, is making up over 7% of the total portfolio. And that that gives them a lot of diversification.
Mitch, if you can just go back to that slide. The one with the pie chart. Yeah, thank you. I wanted to mention that 44 project number has actually grown to 58 now. We have a lot of repeat customers. So we're actually building through a 19 asset portfolio with one customer and a 23 asset portfolio with another. So that number's just grown massively, and the total value of the asset portfolio is now north of 450 million rand. And the largest project in that portfolio is less than 5% of the total. And most of the assets are sort of 1-2% of the total. So the concentration risk factor is basically near zero in the case of the asset portfolio for Fund 2.
The point you made a bit earlier about 20 years, that it does relate to Tommy's question. He says, over what period is the IRR calculated and for how long will that 5.5% yield be earned?
So that's it's a 20-year investment. We'll get to the cash flows in a second, but it's, if we do it right, you could get a scenario where you increase your portfolio, your investment portfolio, by using your tax liability. So if you owe SARS 1 million in tax, you can invest the 1 million instead of paying, and then you have an additional income source that's paid to you for the next 20 years. So good. I wish it was longer, actually, because then you'd be paid longer. It's a depreciating asset, and the biggest complaint I get on the cash flows, because remember, the revenue enters into the partnership. We then have to pay the interest, the debt, expenses. We then pay the investors, and then only after can the GP earn. So,
also, just want to be clear on the nature of the yield. It starts at 5.5%, but it escalates annually at CPI every year for the full term. And that means that your average yield in the first 5 years is about 7%. And over the full period, I think it gets up to 12-13% over the full term. And that's due to the nature of the offtake agreements, because, of course, they are linked either directly or indirectly with CPI. And generally speaking, they actually escalate faster than CPI, because they have some of them have NERSA links, where, as we know, Eskom gets above inflationary increases on average over the last decade, much above. So, the idea is that the yield starts fairly slim, which is the nature of these PPAs, and grows over time.
Yeah. So I think just to get into the tax saving. Okay. So just to recap. Investor puts 55 Rand, we have 45 Rand debt, 100 is deployed onto the portfolio. That generates revenue. Revenue is then used to pay expenses like interest, debt, then to pay the investor, and then the GP keeps the upside. Okay, so that's how it works. The biggest benefit is the tax saving. So I want to quickly dive into that. And I think this illustrates it very well, this graph over here, or this table, sorry. So let's look at someone earning 5 million Rand in their personal capacity. They're paying 2059 in tax. Individual 2 is earning the same amount, and they do a 1 mil investment. We take out of 777,000 Rand of non-recourse debt. We now have a total investment of 1.7 mil. You get 125% on the 1.7, because if this person never existed and never did this investment, there'd be 1.7 mil less of solar in the country. SARS wants you to invest into solar. If they didn't, they wouldn't have this incentive. Okay. So you go 125% times 1.7 gives you the 2.22 mil deduction. Llewellyn and them did a 222% deduction on the 12B last year. We're always going to peg it at that number. Your taxable income goes from 5 mil minus 2.2 equals 2.7. Okay, on the tax that you're paying on the 2.7 is 1,059, which is exactly 1 million rand less than you were paying in the past. So what have we... Yes, sorry, Alec.
So you get your million rand back. There are a couple of, and I think that's very clear. There are a couple of questions from Stuart, which it's probably appropriate to pick up now. He wanted to know about the debt ratio, how that's calculated. In other words, on here you got 777,000 or 77% of the relative to the million capital. How was that 77% calculated?
I think Luel, you can take this one.
Should I take that? So what we do is we look at the blended depreciation value of the asset portfolio. So there are some old and used 12B assets which come in, which attract 100% depreciation. And then the vast majority are 12BA, 125% assets. So what we essentially do is we look at the total cost of the asset base. We multiply that up by the blended depreciation value, which is actually going to come in at around about 120%. And then we back calculate the gearing ratio required to reach the 222% deduction value. And that is going to come out at between 46 and 48% gearing of the total. So the minimum gearing that you would need is 43.75%. So just because we've got some 12B assets in there, it's going to get up to about 46, 48%. And incidentally, that's in fact very low gearing for the energy industry. The standard is around about 70%. And the debt service cover ratios that you would expect to see in the market are around about 1.25. Our debt service cover ratios are north of 1.8 throughout, so they minimize at 1.8. And essentially what that means is that our ability or the partnership's ability to service its debt is very strong. And so the risk related to the debt is very low. It's a lot lower than it would be in the industry at large. And so we're very confident that the gearing levels that we put in are conservative from a risk perspective, whilst at the same time achieving what we thought was an important number, which was that minimum of 222% deduction of the investment value.
So it actually ensures that the person in the top tax rate gets all their tax back.
Exactly.
Immediately.
Yeah. So if you were to get your phone calculator out, you know, multiply 2.22 million by 45%, and you will get exactly 1 million rand. That's how we, you know, that's what we've effectively goal-seeked for in terms of the gearing ratio.
His follow-up question was, what is the capital gains tax impact after 20 years? I know he says this has been an issue with the 12Js.
So I'll take this one. The 12J is different because you're investing into a company. So you have ownership of a company. Okay. So that's a lot more risky than investing in an asset. Here you're investing in a depreciating asset. It's got a life. You know, it's going to run for 20 years. So it's not a fund. You're not going to get your money out. The yields that you receive will be taxed at your marginal rate. And if you were to sell, let's say if you sell your interest to a bank or to a friend or to your spouse or your kid, the money that you receive will always be taxed at your marginal rate because you've already received the depreciation, the 125% deduction upfront. So it's never going
to
be...
Just to add to that, in 12J, the... Because you receive the tax incentive upfront, you are liable for capital gains tax from the first rand of your exit. So if you put 1 million rand in and you sold your shares for 1.2 million rand, you may expect that your CGT is going to be applied on that 2 million rand gain that you've made. However, in 12J, in fact, the way that it works is that you get CGT on the full 1.2, which is obviously adverse. But of course you've received the incentive upfront. So at time value of money, it's still well worth your while. In the case of 12B, it's slightly different in that if you buy an asset for $1 million, or the partnership buys an asset for $1 million and you have a fractional interest in that asset, you only pay CGT to the extent that the sale price exceeds 1 million rand. So it's actually more conventional CGT, right? So it's given that these are depreciating assets, it's highly unlikely that in fact CGT will be due. However, what you will see on exit, if there is an exit, is a recoupment. And that what that means is to the extent you've claimed the deduction upfront with SARS, when you sell that asset, you will be recouped for the sale price of the asset at that point. So there will be a recoupment, which amounts to a similar type of tax position for the investors.
It's a very important issue that, and I guess my thought is, how many people who have participated in 12J are now, because they would have understood the tax incentive side, are now also participating in this 12B Section A, this project?
So the
good question, Alec. I would say it's a great opportunity. If there is an opportunity to exit for any 12J investors who are therefore going to see a capital gains tax event, that capital gains tax event can be offset by a 12B investment. So it's a great opportunity for someone to exit a 12J and for their inclusion portion, which would be for individuals 40%, that 40% could then be invested into a 12B fund, and then you can actually do away with that capital gains tax on the 12J exit.
And I think a good, now since we are talking about 12J, remember 12J, you get 100% deduction and you can't incorporate debt. So for this example, it would be a 1 mil deduction and your tax saving would be 450,000. So you would still have 550,000 at risk. Okay. Here you are investing in assets, infrastructure assets that are much less risky than investing in a startup company, venture capital company. You have $0 at risk essentially. So you have a much higher tax saving, and these assets are predictable. They generate consistent revenue. If there weren't such secure assets, banks wouldn't be lining up to fund them. I mean, well, he's put, you know, you can put banks and third-party debt providers against each other because people just have money they're looking to deploy, and they're very desperate to finance these solar assets because of how reliable and tangible they are. You know, you can always claim them back. So the key thing is the tax saving, right? This is the biggest draw, where we have the biggest tax saving in the industry, or one of the biggest tax saving in the industry. If you were a prov taxpayer in this environment, or let's say you owed SARS R1 million now in August, you would just pay them R1 million. Sorry, you'd invest R1 million and you don't owe SARS anything. So there you've had no after-tax money at risk here. If you're a pay-as-you-earn, it can still work very well for you. And we have a lot of listed CEOs and high-income earners where you would have received, you would have already paid the tax on this 5 mil. So you have 3 mil. You would then have to have R1 million out of your pocket, and then you'd have to get a refund next year. So it still works very well, Alec. It's just a timing issue. But the main thing here is that we're always going to get this 222% deduction. We're always going to get the full deployment, and we've worked tirelessly, months with Weber Wenzel. I could speak for 2 hours on the tax side, and we've really ironed out any nook and cranny any way that SARS could attack this. We've got it covered. We have a tax opinion from Duncan McAllister and June Chong from Weber Wenzel, and we are in talks with KPMG to get a binding tax ruling, which we're working on. But just to get to the cash flow,
I just want to say that we've got a couple of questions, and we're into the last quarter of our webinar, if you can just finish the presentation, we can hit the questions then.
Right. Okay. So this is how the cash flow would work. It would be, R1 million out, you'd receive R1 million refund either immediately or later, depending on your tax status, if you're a prof taxpayer or not. If you invest in August, you secure your spot. There's limited space available. And the reason because of the August deadline is because we have 18 projects we want to turn on, and we can only turn them on after the partnership is finalized. So we have 18 projects just laying in the sun, not generating any revenue. We can only turn them on once our partnership's finalized. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about who the first owner of the assets are. The first owner of the assets is going to be the partnership. There's no doubt about that. You would get a bonus yield in Feb, and then each year you get 5.5%, which increases by inflation for the next 20 years, which is 1.9 mil paid out over 20 years. If the central only pay 30K, let's say in February 2026, they would have to pay the shortfall for the next year. And only after they've fulfilled this obligation can they actually take upside. So this is more a obligation, right, of the partnership and less of a equity target. I've seen some equity 12Bs. One month, it's this amount. Next month, it's high. I'm like, how can you change your target month to month? You know, anyone can write a number on a pitch deck. But here you have a very high chance of receiving these funds because all this work that Luel and his team have put in will be for nothing until they pay you, the investor. They have unlimited liability. They don't get the tax benefit, but they do get the upside. The investor gets the tax benefit. They have limited liability, but they get the limited upside. Okay. 1.9, and what we've effectively done here, Alec, is my biggest complaint that I'll get will be, oh, you know, 20 years is quite a long time, and 5.5, especially in South Africa, and 5.5% is quite low. I can get this at a bank. And to that I say, you know, put your million in, get your million out, then you can invest in your fixed deposit or buy a house or take it offshore, do whatever you want with it. But we've essentially used your tax liability to create an annuity income stream that's going to be paying you for the next 20 years. So I've seen scenarios where people have sold their business and they're retiring. So that works perfectly because they offset the tax this year. And when they're retired, this can be a great source of passive income, which will be taxed at a lower rate because the investor would have been retired. Okay, so this is how the cash flow works. I know we're a bit short on time, so I'm going to quickly. And I think we might have got a bit too technical, talking too technical early on, but there are exit and put and call options.
Should I go? You go, Mitch.
I'm not sure if we want to spend a lot of time here. We're running out of time. But in a nutshell, Alec, it put options for the investor. The call option is for Decentral. It just allows you to exit at a discounted rate. So they take your future cash flows, they owe you their present value, them at a discounted rate, and that's what they exit you at. I wouldn't suggest an investor takes this option unless they really need to, because you would essentially be sacrificing 11.75% of the future cash flows owed to you. But the parachute is there if guys want to get up early. And happy to speak with an investor in detail about any aspects of the investment, especially this one. We're just running a bit short on time. So in conclusion, Alec, and I'm very excited to answer those questions. In conclusion, this investment, you get 100% of your money back. So you get a free investment. You're increasing your total portfolio with your tax liability and turning your liability into an invested asset. You are not invested in one or two projects. You have 58 projects now. Really protects you and brings down the risk profile quite dramatically. You have an aligned fee structure where there's nothing in it for Decentral. Decentral, they're not just a pop-up company that have started solar. They've done 15 years of solar. They've learned the hard yards in the early stages. Now, when you invest with them, you're not going to be along with them while they're still learning. They've really refined their process, and it's a good place to be as an investor, knowing that these guys know what they're doing. It's not the first rodeo for solar, and it's also not the first rodeo for fund managing. You know, as I said, they've done a 12J and a 12B. No upfront annual fees. they're on risk, and there's full incentive to pump this thing as much as possible because Decentral's earning the upside. And if you invest in August, I know it is a bit of a tight deadline, you secure your spot. We might have a partnership later on in the year, Alec, but it's going to probably have 10 projects, and the yields might be a bit lower. So most people do think about tax in Feb, but then that's too late. We won't have any projects left, and nor will any of the other 12Bs. So it's best that you get ahead of this, because come Feb, when everyone's scrambling, there's not going to be any space available. And this is the last year it's ever going to be around, this incentive. And good, I think that's
good point that you made there at the end. I was going to say that to you, because surely for many, many people, that would be the greatest incentive. You're not going to get this again unless there's a different government that starts bringing in investment, or by using tax incentives to get more investment to the economy. And that, who knows how long that might take. Okay, minimum and maximum investment sizes, please.
So the minimum's 500,000 rand. If you are doing over 500, we can do an arrangement where you would put 500 now, 50%, and then the balance in Feb. So we have some advocates that have big prop tax payments now, but instead of paying tax, they're investing. And then the second prop tax payment will do the same thing. As long as we get the deed of adherence signed by end of August, and we can show the taxman, listen, Mr. John Doe signed this agreement on 31st of August, and we turn the assets on 1st of September. That's the most important thing. Maximum, I would say 100 mil. I don't know, that's more Luol, but yeah, I don't think that would be an issue for most clients.
There's no technical maximum, but yeah, our maximum would be determined by the capacity available in terms of the asset portfolio.
Great. What proof of investment will the, and these are from an anonymous attendee, that's why I'm not giving you the name, will the investor receive to present to SARS? And when will the investor receive this? And I think this is probably those provisional taxpayers who've got to settle things up at the end of August.
So what we give is a certificate of admission into the partnership. And what that gives is a confirmation to the investor that, you know, for purposes of their provisional tax payment one, that their deduction is 222%. And then once the year of assessment is completed in February next year, we will give the tax statement to each investor, which will essentially divide up the income tax position for the full partnership per each investor's fractional partnership interest. And that'll be provided after the end of the year of assessment, when people are going through their final provisional tax returns or their individual tax return for PAYE taxpayers.
The key thing is you take care of that. You take care of the documentation that then goes along. And I'm sure, Mitchell, from your perspective, from Pangea's perspective, that has to be in hand. These are your clients who would be investing through you. They would expect that as a minimum anyway.
Yes, and you have deed of adherence and your partnership agreement, which is your proof of ownership. So if you put a million in and the partnership's 200 mil, the deed of adherence says, okay, you are a 0.5% partner in this partnership, and that's drafted by Weber Wenzel. So it's quite a properly done document.
Can the tax savings, Stuart asks, be carried across multiple years?
Yes, so it can. We've done a few trusts, because trusts, you always tax at 45. So that works well. You can actually go into an assessed loss and then reap the benefit for multiple years. In a personal capacity, it makes it a bit more complicated, because as you more you deduct, the more you're dropping down in the tax brackets, which means your tax savings is going to be less. But what's very useful, Alec, is we've developed a financial model where we can sit with a client, understand their taxable income, understand if their prop taxpayer pays you earn, and then we can backward engineer an amount to say, okay, here's your taxable income. If you were to do R1 million investment, this is the yield, this is the IRR, this is when you would receive your tax saving, this is your deduction, and we can paint a clearer picture for the investor on what an investment would look like for their particular situation.
Tommy's question is a good one. It's certainly one that I was also thinking about. He says his understanding at this point is that the initial capital is returned via tax saving that we got. You then earn 5.5% per annum, increasing by CPI or the inflation rate. How is the yield taxed? In other words, how's that 55,000 Rand on your R1 million notional investment taxed? Or is the yield a dividend on the equity component?
So you are a limited partner. So the fiscus falls on you. So it's we are looking at ways where we can restructure it in the future and make the partnership a company and then issue a dividend. But worst case scenario, as it stands, it would fall part of your taxable income, the profit share, and then you could deduct the expenses and obviously not deduct the debt repayment. So it would be taxed in your marginal income rate.
All right. You can't have it always, in other words. You're getting your tax back. You're getting 5.5%, but you are going to be taxed on that, that's the story. We're going to close off with this question. Please clarify Section 24H of the Tax Act. Obviously, there's a guy here who's staying anonymous who knows what they're talking about. The total deductions or allowances a limited partner can claim against their tax obligations cannot exceed their financial commitment or liability towards the partnership's debts. For SARS purposes, the investor is liable for their portion of debt by the nature. How are they protected from the provider of the debt?
Yeah, it's a great question.
I can take that.
Go for it.
No. In order to claim a 222% deduction, an investor has to be liable for 222% of their investment. And what that means in practice, if you invest R1 million into the fund, you have to be liable for another 1.22 million rand over and above that. And our partnership agreement is structured in this way. So it is possible for investors to experience what we term a liability contribution, which is essentially drawdowns over and above their additional investment. However, that is simply a requirement, or specifically a requirement, in order to claim the full deduction upfront. The probability of those drawdowns, of a liability contribution drawdown, is extremely low. And the main reason for that is our debt is structured as limited recourse debt, which means the lender's security is limited to the partnership assets, which are, of course, the physical assets, the power purchase agreements, the bank accounts, insurances, and the likes. So the partners own all of that, right? So they are liable to lose that, but they aren't liable to lose their house or any other assets which they have outside of the partnership. So in terms of 24H, we are fully compliant, and we of course have to have that liability level in the partnership in order to give our investors the full deduction. And specifically, I don't know, I think the question was also around the debt, but I think I've answered that in that our debt is limited recourse.
Well, it's quite technical, and you certainly have. So thank you very much, Luel. Thank you also, Mitchell. Stu, do you want to tell us, please, when this is going to be available for those who want to watch the recording, and indeed for the rest of our community?
Excellent. Thanks, Alec, and thanks, Mitchell and Luel. Always pick up a little nugget, no matter how many 12B webinars I've been to. So thank you. Alec, we'll get the webinar onto the YouTube BizNews TV channel probably in the next half hour, an hour. So if anyone here wants to access that, they can just go to BizNews TV on YouTube. And there's also an email that will be sent out to all participants with a link to the actual webinar itself and with the links to the more information as well, both Decentral and Pangaea Wealth.
And just before we close off there, Alec, I would encourage, if anyone is interested, they're more than welcome to reach out to me at mitchell@pangaeawealth.org or on our website. You can fill in the form and we'll contact you. It's proven to be extremely valuable, that model where understand your situation, and then we tailor and model an investment based off the investor's requirements. So happy to do that with any person that wants to do that exercise.
Thanks, Mitchell. Thanks, Luel. Thanks as always, Stu. Until the next time, cheerio.